We had some bad weather, and what happened is, I was concerned about a young chap, and he'd been left at the station, and some bad weather was coming in, and I was a bit concerned about his own safety, because he was a chap who was a nice young lad, but lacked the experience, and I felt safety, conscious of his safety. I went on a skidoo to go and rescue him, but unfortunately my skidoo had was under repair, and it was parked in a big windscoop, and I had an accident, which I don't mind saying this, I demolished a temporary workshop facilities, which was a tent in that area, which was one of these floatable things. Unknowing to me, I picked myself up, but I was seriously injured, but I wasn't going to let them stop. All the teams were having their meal. Now, how does the boss tell the team? But we've come to the end of the thing. I had a big notice saying, the first one to demolish the our workshop facilities before the high jump. How does the boss tell them? But the boss has demolished it in that area. Well, it went down well. You've got to face it. Now, they're going to find out in that area. Anyway, I went and recovered the bloke, and he couldn't hear the radio because he had a Walkman on. Oh, I detest those. He had a Walkman. He was listening to music in that area. You know, I really detest that situation because you're not unaware of what's happening around you. You know, however, that cost me my career in the field. That trip, I got on board the ship. I came very ill. I finished up in hospital in Montevideo, and being in hospital in Montevideo, people going about our hospital nurse love, they want to try an hospital in Montevideo. I actually finished up with clots and this sort of situation. I thought, well, I don't fancy dying here. I'll die at home, and at least my wife will see whatever it is like. So I more or less volunteered because I won't admit how ill I was, you know. But I could inject myself with all the necessary drugs to keep me going. Ironically, it's the first time I've ever flown first class. So they flew me past first class. But when I landed at Heathrow, my strength and whatever give up. And I collapsed at Heathrow. And it was touch and go for me, and I was in intensive care. But there'd been two occasions. You say your life over death in that area. There was one occasion in the Antarctic where I thought my time was there, and suddenly my dad came to me. He said, "You're not a loser, Alan. Get off your ass." I wish I did, and I saved myself. Same thing happened there. Come on, it's not your time yet. And it wasn't, and I recovered. But I could no longer go down, unfortunately. I was seriously ill, and my doctor wanted me to retire there and then, but I wouldn't. I had to finish Halley. After 3 months, I went back to work on a temporary engine and planning. I was still working at home, but the medical system said, "That's it, Alan, you've had it." Because I was pushing my luck. I was old in that area. I wouldn't admit to myself, but I was getting tired. But they did find somebody else who was a great guy, and I knew him personally, and I supported him in that area. But it was a hard time for them to finish. So that was more or less my... I covered like 20, something like 28 years.
What I'd like to do now,
commencing from what I call...
Is just talk about
the expiration time. Expiration time. To modern times in that area, which is totally different. I saw the developments of lots of things. And I will start with, if you like, communications, which is very important. Communications, when I first went down, was CW, Morse code. I saw the introductions of teleprinters. Absolutely fabulous teleprinters, you know, because in those days, you're only allowed 200 words in and 100 words out in that area. Of course, once a year, but that wasn't a problem for me. And then the next one, as I was in the sort of management side, introduction of facts, This means I could send drawings and help over. What a breakthrough. Absolutely superb. And then, compression data, satellites. The dreaded emails, but it was fertile. It really helps design and planning. There's no question about that. Step in the right direction for communications. The next one, as far as I'm concerned, is an environment one. The survey originally were environment friendly, but not as great as it should have been in that area. But I'm not knocking it, because nobody else was. We want environment friendly in the UK even. But they've made tremendous steps in how they manage their waste, how they pack the waste in that sort of area and bring it out in that area. So tremendous in that management and in various. I can only speak too highly about that. People are dedicated to that. The next phase, actually, in fact, was diet in that area, but this was all tied up to the development and the diet. The diet before was really burning calories, big calorie diets. But science changed. It wasn't as physically hard. And the provision of walking freezes, you were able to provide frozen food as opposed to tinned food within that area, and having good backup and reliability. So the diet actually quite tremendously improved. Right, the next one which I saw was in all intents and purposes, was medical. Tremendous breakthroughs in medical, but they had dedicated hospitals at the base, well equipped within that area. And the most important things, in the early days, it wasn't the fault of anybody, but it could be possible, but you were working with outdated drugs. And what the system evolved is actually fact was replacing annually all the drugs, all the medical equipment went out. The other thing was the writing of a manual called Curafid, which goes back to the 1967 when the original author actually fact had his accident, and he wrote a simple book called Curafid, which is a good guide to medical aid, which is in field medical books. The second, the other thing is like, they used to be called base commanders, but then they actually found, they used to be called base leaders, but then became base commanders in the area. And what they started to do is to offer long-term contracts for them in that area. And I think that was a great point. Now, you can debate it. You can say, well, what makes a good base commander? And this is my assessment, not anybody else. But what you have to be a good base commander, you have to lead from the front. You have to be fair and just. You've got to be able to, if there's a dispute in any way whatsoever, whether it's time for discipline, you've got to be able to compromise and sort those out. And I think that's actually fine. And I think you've got to actually fight sort of, I know a base commander sometimes is privy to private and confidential information, but you've got to keep the base aware of what's happening within the area. So these are the qualities. Now, in the beginning, there was no base commander manual, but the modern days now, I understand that there is a base commander, and I think it covers some of these options. Well, the other things, is clothing. When I first went down, it was ex-army. It was scratchy things. It was Norwegian sweaters. I just string vests in that area. Well, you know, they were great. It was great at the time, that knowledge. But the modern clothing today is absolutely superb. It's based on layer principle, and it dries very quickly in that area. Easy, cleanable, it's tremendous. Improving the safety in that area. Field communications is completely different now. Field travel is completely different. There's actually, in fact, it's with motorised vehicles, small motorised vehicles of various kinds, from skidoos to to track vehicles in that area, which are suited to going aircraft in that area. And aviation, with the development of Rothera, twin-engine aircraft, you can fly quickly into the field in the air. So that aspect has made tremendous service. Now, health and safety. How did health and safety get into the Antarctic? I have no facts for this, but this is my opinion, because I was Deputy and Safety Advisor Officer, because I had training in health and safety when I was a building inspector, when it was on the racks to come in. Health and safety is really, we've always been responsible for our own safety within that set of individuals I'm talking about. But because our operation zone was connected to the Falkland Islands and we had an office in the Falkland Islands, the health and safety really as such was based on the Falkland Islands, which really would be round about, if you like, the 1930s in that area, which suited expeditions type of things, which was great. You know, that's why the ships were registered there, the aircraft were registered there in that area. However, once you closed the that facilities, the mother base actually was Cambridge in that area. It brought you into the umbrella of UK registration. I can remember writing to Bill Sloman and said, well, we've got to worry about health and safety. And this is when Bill Sloman, quite a few, and I can remember saying, look, our present operating system, we could not operate under the existing laws in that area because we're multi-skill, we're stevedores, we lift heavy weights, we're manually working, all exceed the modern terms of EEC regulations in that sort of area. I was involved in risk assessments in that area. I mean, how do you do a risk assessment, you know, in the Antarctic? I mean, life's at risk. Oh, there are tremendous changes. And I think I won't say any more about that risk assessment, because I'd just like to say, but I go back to one of my other statements, when I met Sir Raymond Priestley, and he said, but he was a man of his time and I'm a man of my time. And as far as I'm concerned, my early days were right for me. I couldn't be a modern Fed. I hope any historian finds this interesting. But I had a wonderful life. And as far as I'm concerned, I had a wonderful wife who supported me. And without her support, I actually won't be able to achieve this. Because it wasn't work to me, it was my hobby. Out of that, I received some very awards. I received the Polar Medal. I can't understand why I received the Polar Medal at all, because I was enjoying life in the area. But somebody in the wilderness thought I decided it in that area. I was chosen by my workmates, the Fuchs Medal. Oh, unbelievable. And the Fuchs Medal was actually in fact going to be presented to me on the get-together of the 50th anniversary of the IGY, Crossing of the Antarctic. But unfortunately, I couldn't stand. But I have written a report, an acknowledgement, because my wife booked holiday in Italy, in that area. And then, lo and behold, I got another award, was my class to the Polar Medal, an MBE. And I thought, why me in that area? And so off in that area. In fact, it took well over a year to get the Queen to present the Polar Medal, because light-hearted enough, my engagement diary clashed with the Queen's diary. And at one time, I said, well, why don't you put them in a jiffy bag? But I was wrong. It was a wonderful experience, not only for me, but for my wife, and to take a friend to Buckingham Palace to be awarded by the Queen. Well, thanks for listening to me. Cheers.